another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Lindsay Hughley, and joining me today is Amy Haislip. Amy is an Executive Vice President and General Counsel of the Tennessee Bankers Association in Nashville. She joined TBA in 2009 as Associate Counsel and was promoted to Executive Vice President and General Counsel in 2017. She oversees the association's legal and governmental relations department, including the association's legislative programs on both the state and national levels. She provides regulatory information to TBA member banks and assists bank attorneys with legal questions and problems related to the financial industry. Prior to joining the TBA, Amy spent 4 years as an attorney for the state of Tennessee, working at the Department of Human Services and then the Department of Commerce and Insurance. She graduated summa cum laude from the Honors College of Missouri State University, Springfield, with a BS in Finance. She received her JD degree from the University of Memphis School of Law in 2005. Amy is a member of the Tennessee and Nashville Bar Association and previously served on the Board of Tennessee Lobbyist Association and as chair of the association. She is also a member of the Estate Planning Council of Middle Tennessee. Welcome, Amy.
Hi, Lindsay.
As a native Tennessee banker, I am so excited about having you on the show today, and I'm really looking forward to digging into our topic. But first, here at Banking Matters, we always like to hear how our guests got their start in the financial industry.
Sure. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here. So my start's a little bit unique, I guess. It wasn't necessarily intentional. I went to law school in Memphis, and after that, I worked for the state for several years, and for the 4 years prior to joining TBA, I worked for the insurance division. So I did a lot of enforcement cases against insurance agents and companies. So not really any experience in banking except for being a finance major in college. And then when I was with the insurance division, I had a case working kind of against an attorney representing some agents. And he just kind of called me out of the blue one day. And I was thinking it was about the case we were working on together, but it was actually about a job opening at TBA to work under the general counsel as one of their attorneys and lobbyists at the state level. So they always say one of the best interviews you can do is when you go in with a lot of questions. And I certainly did, because I didn't really understand the role of a lobbyist or an association. So I did go on a lot of questions. I ended up getting the job, and I've been here for 15 years now in September, but it's been great. I enjoy it. Really, most of all, love working with all of the community banks and banks across the state.
Yes, for sure. It is, just me personally, the exposure that I've been given through the association has been, throughout my career, has just been great. Okay. But to kind of dive into our topic, so elder financial exploitation. This is a huge thing plaguing banks across the country. So, and as a banker, it is terrible to witness. And I know that TBA is fully aware of this, that they really got their teeth in on this subject. But I would really love to like dig in. What is the association doing to help banks kind of combat that elder financial exploitation?
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk about that. It's really been a priority of ours for about 10 years now. It started in maybe late 2015, early 2016, when we really started hearing from bankers, you know, it's the stories really more than just the dollar amount. You can hear, you know, billions of dollars every year are lost to, you know, financial scams against the elderly. But when you hear the stories of how an elderly customer is impacted, that's really what hits home for us. There's a lot of frustration from the bankers of their inability to take certain actions to stop this. And then we started hearing from some other state agencies that work with the elderly of, why aren't you guys doing more? If you could stop every transaction at the teller window, this wouldn't be a problem. So that's kind of a wake-up call to us. Like, if we aren't proactive in this front, there's going to be some other agencies that are proactive and set some parameters around what banks should do, more mandates. And you know, being a banker, we don't necessarily love mandates, and we wanted to get it right. So we worked with the credit unions. We hosted, I think, 7 or 8 roundtables across the state. We had state agencies there, and really, we just asked them, you know, what are you guys seeing? And most importantly, what do you want to be able to do that you can't do now legally? And so from that, we took away 3 key things. One is they wanted the ability to pause or delay transactions if they suspected financial elder exploitation. They wanted to be able to notify close family members or kind of a list of trusted persons. And then also powers of attorney are a huge problem. So they wanted the ability to say no to those as well. So we compiled all of that. We put it into comprehensive legislation. which we passed nearly unanimously in 2017. So we were, as far as I know, the first state to take such a comprehensive approach with all three of those tools. It's been met with, you know, great appreciation from bankers. They're really taking advantage of this, I'd say, especially the pausing or delaying of transactions, but all three tools. And then a lot of other state associations, I mean, to this day are still calling and asking for copies of the law, asking what we did, because they're still looking at it as well. So that's something that we're really proud of, just the ability to have done something. I'm pretty sure there were some bankers that were already doing some of those things before we passed it into law. We know it's out there and completely understand why. And I'll add one important thing too, when we did that, we wanted to make sure that it wasn't a mandate on banks to delay transactions. So for each of those things, it's very clear. If you suspect something, you may take those actions, but you certainly don't have to, because we always want to protect banks from liability also. And we don't want anyone coming in, a family member or a son of someone who's taken advantage of, and saying, you should have stopped this transaction. Why didn't you? It's your fault. Since that time too, you know, working with the state agencies a lot, it's been great because we've been able to collaborate with each other and work together. And that's really helped too. I think it's opened their eyes to realizing, you know, there's not a magic solution. You can't just stop the transaction every time at the teller window. And so it's been good to get to know those agencies also.
Absolutely. And I can say, just from a personal perspective, and especially now that I get to help banks across the country, them being able to know where, what state agencies to reach out to in their own individual state is a huge help. And so what else are we doing to kind of help between banks and our customers? Have we got anything that kind of bridges that gap? Because I know that you've talked a lot about the state agencies and the banks, but what about between the banks and our customers that are struggling?
That's a great question. I think the biggest piece there is education. And I think if there is sort of one magic solution, it's education. If you could educate every customer on what to look out for, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Unfortunately, the scams are ever evolving. They're hard to keep up with. I think you throw in artificial intelligence now and, you know, Bitcoin, and that's even scarier because the elderly, you know, I'm not as familiar with, you know, AI and what all it can do, but the elderly especially don't understand that someone can call and impersonate your banker and it sounds just like them, and they can convince you to go deposit your money in a Bitcoin ATM and you'll never see it again. So I think absolutely there's a lot of banks out there that spend a lot of time not just educating their customers, but they go out in the community to the senior centers and assisted living and talk about that as well. So I think education is the most important thing that banks can do with their customers.
Absolutely. And so what are you guys seeing as far as challenges that are preventing customers, as far as the bank, like what's the biggest challenge that you see from them advocating for their customers that become victims?
I think the biggest challenge that bankers face is really just convincing the customer sometimes that they are a victim or will likely become a victim, that they're being targeted by a scammer. I think especially when you talk about the elderly, they're older, a lot of them are lonely. They fall victim to these romance scams where it's their boyfriend or girlfriend in another country has convinced them that they are a live living person and they need $20,000 for their child that went into the hospital. And it's companionship. They'll spend hours on the phone with them. They'll establish these relationships for years. The stories are just mind boggling. But a lot of times, no matter what the folks in the bank try to do to sit down and talk to the customer, they just refuse to admit. I think sometimes it's embarrassment. And then I think a lot of other times, even if they realize after the fact they've been taken advantage of, they don't want to admit it, because then the next step would be for the family to come in and try to take control of their finances. And just going through this with my own grandparents, you know, a lot of times you don't want to give up control of your finances. So you just kind of keep it your secret and don't say anything. So definitely just the inability to convince customers sometimes to say no.
Absolutely. And I know that they come to it with that shame and that guilt of being sucked into this and not wanting to admit that they've messed up so badly. It is heart-wrenching to watch as a banker, knowing for sure that they are in a scam, but they just don't want to hear that. So along with the pause and delay of funds, what steps has TBA taken to kind of advocate for their banks in regards to elder financial exploitation?
Well, I think since that 2017 law passed, again, we've always collaborated with other state agencies. We've participated in meetings with area agencies on aging. I think most importantly, we started working with TBI, the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation. They would host meetings at their office for a couple of years. And, you know, I was on a panel recently with the director of TBI when he said, you know, there's this light bulb moment where we all realized, hey, if we could just have this 1-800 number for banks to call, banks, I mean, all financial institutions, to call and report suspected elder exploitation, we've got the resources here to work with local law enforcement to investigate. And I'll give credit to a couple of bankers in Tennessee that brought that idea to me because they were frustrated. Sometimes they call the local police, you know, this isn't on their radar. They don't know how to investigate this, especially if it's a romance scam in another country. And so it was their ask of, hey, if we could just have this 800 number, that would be so helpful. And so that's exactly what TBI did. We worked together with them. They passed legislation this past session. It took effect over the summer, and they had until October 1st to set up this hotline for all financial institutions to call and report elder exploitation. So it's been kind of a soft launch for them the past month, but they've already had at least 5 reports from financial institutions. And the director, when I was on the panel, kind of went through each of the different scenarios, and they're all so different, from a contractor scamming them to the romance scam. But they either take the case kind of themselves and use one of their own investigators to look into it, or they'll send it to the local law enforcement, you know, if it's the local contractor that's doing something that he shouldn't as well. But it's a tremendous opportunity. TBI, you know, this is kind of the first step in getting this off the ground. They're also going to work with local law enforcement to educate them so they know what to look for and how to investigate these allegations. And then also TBI and Will Help as well make the pitch for them to get state funding to hire additional investigators, that we kind of refer to them as the elder investigators. So they'll be dedicated to looking into these suspicions of elder financial exploitation, which would be huge because TBI has tremendous resources, and they can not only help convince that particular customer they're potentially a victim of a scam, but they can go after those bad actors that are operating these criminal rings really around the world. So we're really excited about that. For any financial institution, if you want to call and report, it's pretty easy. It's 1-888-PAUSETN. So PAUSETN. And from there, TBI will kind of prompt the financial institution on how to file that report online, and then they'll take it from there.
That is,
we're really excited about that.
Yes, that's really great. And to be able to have TBI involved, but then also to push those resources down into local law enforcement, because that has been such a struggle. Majority of the banks that I work with are in these really rural, small places. They're not in a metropolis place where there's easy access to large police departments at all. Everything that they're dealing with are very stretched very thin. And I've had several times where they've been like, there's nothing we can do because it is someone far off and everything. And so now to be able for bankers to be able to have that direct tie and that direct call into TBI is going to be awesome.
Yeah. And what TBI specifically, what their goal is to hire 4 new investigators. So they'll have they have 4 regions throughout the state. So those in rural communities will have direct access to some. And I find too, I mean, I think all banks have a vested interest in calling and reporting. But when you get in the rural communities, when they really know their customers and it's the local banks, you know, those are the ones that we hear from the most. And those are the stories that make the biggest impact as well.
Absolutely. And so moving forward, like, I know that elder financial exploitation, the bulk of this is still on the state level. Do you ever see any regulatory things being pushed into place at a national level in regards to kind of combating this epidemic that we're in?
I would hope so. I haven't heard talk of that recently, but I know in the past, I want to say 2018, and I could be off on that year, there was legislation at the federal level that was passed that if banks do training on this with their employees, then would give them some immunity from liability, like we talked about with our law as well. So some action has been taken. Unfortunately, you know, it's harder to get anything done at the federal level than there is at the state level. So I think it is up to the states to really be at the forefront of this.
Absolutely. And I would definitely say any banks that are listening and out there, they really need to touch base with their association to see what their state does have in place. Because I know I've spoken with a few different SBAs over the last couple of months about different things at just a state level that they're mandating and maybe they're the forerunner of. But just really utilizing that state banking association as such, you guys are the best resources some majority of the time, especially for our community banks.
Well, thank you.
Yes. So as we wrap up, we always like to finish with one piece of advice from our guests that you would like to leave our listeners.
I think on this particular topic, especially for bankers, is to be persistent. When you see those, you know, awful cases, you don't give up. Even if the customer refuses to admit that they're being a victim, you know, use the hotline, call the district attorney's office, get the attention of somebody to get them involved as well. And then to also be persistent with your state associations and kind of keep us in the loop of what they're seeing, because there's always, you know, we've got the ability to change state laws and give you some more tools, but we need to know what's going on and what changes are happening in order to do that. So I think those are kind of the two pieces of advice when it comes to the elder financial exploitation.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Amy. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks. It was great talking to you.
Yes. And for everyone else, that's Banking Matters.